Yes, hello and welcome to the Inside the Huddle podcast in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Trouble with studios again this week, Jeff, but we are together again at least to talk about everything that happened in week 15 and to look ahead to week 16 in the NFL with lots of games on Sky Sports coming up this weekend. Just to let you know that tickets, season tickets are available at the moment for the International Series games for 2015. So you can get the information for those from NFLUK.com or from Ticketmaster.co.uk/NFL. You can buy at the moment, gone on sale with premium club and lower sideline season tickets, and keep your eyes on NFLUK.com for more details on that. Jeff, busy week coming up on Sky Sports. There's a game on Thursday night, two games on Saturday and two games on Sunday. We are now officially at the business end of the season, aren't we, with everything going on?
Well, these are when the big games are the biggest, and there's a natural lull in the Saturday, you know, now that college football's over. They've got their bowl season starting at the end of December, so the NFL can kind of spread the games out, which to me is better because we get a chance to see more football.
We are going to answer your questions in the mailbag. I'm going to open my drink, and it's going to make a horrible sound. It's not beer, I promise you. But yeah, Jeff insists we drink during the day while we record this podcast. What can I say? Couple of bits of news, Jeff. Nick Foles has not been cleared to play on Saturday. Still not fit from that broken collarbone. One more chance for Mark Sanchez. But again, you know, we saw in the game against Dallas on Sunday night, he can produce the yards, but those turnovers are still part of his game.
Yeah, and you know what? As you play at this time of year, and can't stress this enough, in the playoffs and down the stretch to the playoffs, you cannot turn the football over. I mean, ball security is the number one issue, and teams that are going to go a long way in the playoffs don't want to be fighting through extra possessions that their offense gets because you turn the football over. And Sanchez is going to have to deal with this. I thought it was really interesting, a very typical Chip Kelly response to, you know, the Foles and Sanchez controversy. He goes, I'm not worrying about it till they tell me Foles can play because there's no point in it. Sanchez is his guy until Foles gets healthy, and then he'll make his decision.
No point worrying, I guess. Yeah, we look, and when we see a turnover, we start to talk about the interception or the fumble recovery or whatever that play might be. It kind of draws our attention in. Maybe what we forget about is even if there's no return of an interception, but you intercept it near the line of scrimmage, that's essentially a 45-yard play. When you take out if you don't move on offense and then you punt the football away. I mean, these are the hidden yards that we're talking about, aren't we? Every turnover, you then have to, as a defense or an offense, you're overcoming a lot of yards.
Yeah, I mean, let's just do some simple math. The average NFL punter is going to punt the ball 40 to 45 yards. Mm. If you throw an interception on third down and it's thrown 20 yards down the field, that's as though that opponent has a 20-yard punt return. That's a significantly big play. So you gotta understand, and again, I know that every quarterback coach in the National Football League harps on it, and all head coaches talk about it. And, you know, I work for Mark Trestman, and he used to make just an unbelievable big production out of turnovers and ball security, which is amazing because it's killing him.
Really?
Right now. Killing him right now in Chicago. I tell you what, Mark did the best job of anybody I've ever worked for in emphasizing ball security and emphasizing, you know, turnovers and not giving them up. And I know it's just got to be killing him in Chicago what Cutler's doing right now.
Robert Griffin III is going to start again for the Washington Redskins. Colt McCoy has a neck injury, so we'll see RG3 on Saturday night on Sky Sports play against Philadelphia. I know he's only got two games left, but he's at the stage of his young career as well. He needs to make the most of every single opportunity, doesn't he?
No question, because, you know, the NFL is about right now. Mm. It's not about what you did in college or where you were drafted or what you did 2 years ago when you were a rookie or any of those things. The NFL is a business about today and where you're at today. And I think what RG3 needs to prove, and I saw flashes of it, Neil, in what we watched the other day.
Yep.
That was the first time I've seen him, quote, back. Mm-hmm. The body language was what you would anticipate for him. So, again, going forward, two huge weeks for him.
I'm going to talk about RG3 a little bit in a moment, and about he did look much better last week, but maybe still had a problem in the red zone. So we'll talk a little bit about the challenges of playing quarterback in the red zone. One other piece of news that caught my eye, DeMarco Murray has had an operation on a broken bone in his left hand. Now, they're saying, I've seen a couple of reports, one saying he could still play on Sunday. We have that game on Sky Sports, Indianapolis and Dallas. He could still play in that game. I've seen other reports saying he could be out 2 to 3 weeks, which might put them into the, you know, when we're getting into the first round of the playoffs. Any significance in the fact that it's his left hand, Jeff? Would he do a lot of the carrying of the football with the right and then protect him with the left, or is this still a problem for a guy who has led the league in fumbles this year?
Well, I think anytime you put a cast on your hand and you're a guy that has to handle the football, that's not going to help you. He is right-handed, so he naturally tucks the ball underneath his right arm and puts it on his chest high and tight on his right side. But again, like I say, anytime that you've got a cast and you can't use your hand, plus the pain that he's going to go through when that hand gets hit, you know, again, it'll be interesting to see whether how much disinformation and how much information is out there right now in terms of, you know, whether he's going to be able to play. They need him to play because he is such a big part of their offense. When that offense goes best is when he gets 20 to 25 carries a game.
Yeah, he had to work hard for his carries the other night. 31 carries, only about 80-odd yards. But what that did was open up Dez Bryant.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can't defend all of it. If you're going to put extra guys in the box to stop DeMarco Murray, then you're going to give up single coverage outside. And again, whether it's Cole Beasley in the slot or you know, Dez Bryant outside, you can double one of those guys, you know, but you can't double them all. And eventually, you know, Romo with Witten, I saw Witten do better than Witten. That maybe was Jason Witten's best game so far this year. So again, you can take a little bit away, you're going to give in other areas, and you just got to make a decision of how you want him to beat you.
Right-handed or not, if he's about to get hit from the right side, you as a coach would want him to shift it to his left hand anyway, wouldn't you? So,
typically you want to keep the ball away from tacklers and use your off arm to shield the tackler from the football. But again, what happens with these kinds of injuries is this is an athlete who thousands and thousands and thousands of reps has carried the ball a specific way.
Yep.
And so his unconscious mind, he has what we call unconscious competence. He doesn't think about how to hold the ball. He just holds the ball because he's done it so many times. Now you have an injury, and now you have to compensate. And naturally, you're going to put the ball where you think the ball belongs, even though you have a hand, you may have a cast on that hand. So it's not going to make it easy for him. There's no question about that.
Wanted to talk to you. We like to pause on some of the sort of subjects that catch our eye. We don't go into every game here on Inside the Huddle because we know you can get all of that game-by-game breakdown. So we like to pause and talk about some of the bigger issues. And Robert Griffin III and the Washington Redskins. Now, you know Martin Johnson, the big NFL fan, former England rugby player, World Cup winner. He was at that game on the weekend, the Redskins-Giants game. I know it because I sorted his tickets out for him. He texted me yesterday, said, great game, loved watching Odell Beckham and all of that. He said, Redskins could have won, but RG3 couldn't get it done in the red zone. So I wanted to talk to you, Jeff, about, because we see it so often, how games can be won or lost, about finishing drives in the red zone. So tell us about the challenges of playing quarterback in the red zone, so from the 20 yards and into the end zone. Where does it differentiate, and do you want is that where the great ones are at their best?
I think here's what the fans have to recognize is that, you know, offenses are built around your ability to stretch the defense vertically up the field and horizontally from sideline to sideline. Well, the width of the field never changes.
Yep.
But the length of the field changes, obviously, as you get into the red zone. So the defense then can squat on the routes, particularly in the throwing game. They can play closer to the line of scrimmage because they don't have to defend the vertical aspect of the field. So now you've got all of those defenders now in a congested area. The second thing is that because there is so little space, everything happens so much faster down there.
Yep.
The ball has to be out quicker. The windows close very, very quickly. We watched in the San Diego game the other night, I thought that San Diego did a great job putting Gates back on the backside of Trips and throwing a little quick slant that Rivers just made enough of a run fake to hold the linebacker for just
And then he couldn't hang around because he had to get it out.
He couldn't get out to give help on the inside cut to the corner, and they got the touchdown. So the great quarterbacks operate best down there because the game happens. They're so fast with their decisions.
But if Rivers had, and you illustrated that perfectly on the touchscreen, but if Rivers had a moment's hesitation,
ball
then that
pick.
Guy, the ball's got. Yeah,
ball
so that's what you're talking about, that speed.
Exactly, and that's where that separates. That's another area that separates the great quarterbacks from the other quarterbacks.
Mm.
When you get down there, your decisions come so fast. The ball has to be gone so fast. The defense is all closer, so they're so fast to close up the windows. The great ones function best in that environment, and that typically takes a guy a while before he can do that well. Again, you got to understand, RG3's in his third year in the National Football League, but how many games has he actually played?
Yeah.
How many trips has he been down inside the red zone? Well, Philip Rivers is at the other part of his career. His career is winding down. He's got thousands of repetitions down in the red zone.
Tell us about the benefits then of, I mean, we're seeing them spread across the league now, a Jimmy Graham, a Rob Gronkowski, a Antonio Gates, a Mike Evans in Tampa Bay, an Alshon Jeffrey, a Brandon Marshall. If you are in the red zone, does it help to have one of those big targets?
Yeah, it certainly does, because they're available to the quarterback more. Now you say, what
without being open?
What are you talking about? Well, it's just very simple. You got a Smurf like me that's 5'9".
I'm glad you didn't say midget.
I'm not making Marvin's mistake anymore. You know, I'm trying to run around in traffic, and I'm 5'9". I get lost in there. Wes Welker's tough to find around the goal line. But you got a Demaryius Thomas, or you've got one of these big tight ends, Julius Thomas, those kinds of guys. Obviously, they're bigger targets, and it's easier to throw the ball where they can go up and get it as opposed to having to jam a ball in between defenders because the guy doesn't have the ability to get up and catch the ball. So one of the reasons why teams like those big, what we call long-bodied receivers, those with that great catching range, those long arms, is because it gives the quarterback alternative throws that he can't get with a small guy.
What sort of plays do you like seeing down near the goal line? Because we see a lot of those sort of fade routes to the big guys, and to me, they sometimes look hard to pull off. I mean, they don't always, because if you, first of all, you got to have an accurate throw and stay in bounds. Then you got to hope that he comes down with it and it doesn't get broken up. I mean, do you like that play? We see a lot of that.
Well, you know, they say the fade is one of the lower percentage throws in the game. What's really happened, and I think we're going to actually talk about this on the broadcast this week on Sky, is the back shoulder fade. And you saw a perfect example of Peyton threw one on the sideline to Demaryius Thomas in the game against press man coverage. And that throw is the toughest one for a defensive back to handle because he's blind to the football. He's got his back to the ball and doesn't know where the ball's at. So perfecting the back shoulder fade is really, really a critical throw for all quarterbacks down in the red zone.
It was a real treat to see at Wembley Stadium the Dallas-Jacksonville game. So I was in the corner of the end zone where we were broadcasting from, and Dallas ran that back shoulder fade, and you could see it. Dez kind of drove the defensive back off, and he hadn't even got into his cut, and Tony had kind of thrown it 2 or 3 yards back out the other way, and Dez actually cut back and dropped the pass. But it was, you could see how it all unfolded, and it has become so so prevalent in the NFL. I noticed last week going into we had the Bengals game, Andy Dalton's passer rating, this kind of relates to the red zone a little bit, but because it's when you see your quarterback under duress. Dalton's passer rating was at its highest on first down, then it decreased on second down, and it went down on third down. I mean, I know you're not going to see it go the other way. It should be most successful on first down. But again, third down's a big down when you really separate the great ones from the good ones, isn't it?
Right. And let's talk about why those things happen. Well, first of all, on first down, you're going to see most of what we call controlled defenses, where you're going to get more zone on first down than anything else. So obviously the opportunities to throw against zone or man, you need to be less accurate against zone. So your completion percentage against zone will always be higher than it is against man. Then you get into that third down scenario. Now you start to see all the substitution defenses. Mm. You see more blitz than you see in those other downs, which means more man coverage. They're trying to get it out of your hand faster. And then you see more exotic zone blitzes and combination coverage where you're zone on one side, man on the other side. All of that stuff comes at a time when you have to throw the ball more vertically down the field. If it's third and 10, throwing a 5-yard check down against man, there's no future in that. So, again, it's forcing you into the more difficult throws. That's why, again, you see those statistics the way they are.
Let's stick with quarterbacks for a moment. Peyton Manning led the Denver Broncos to their fourth consecutive AFC West title on Sunday night. We had the game on Sky against San Diego. He was suffering with the flu. He suffered a thigh injury. But as I wrote in my column,
he suffered from getting a helmet under his chin.
He did get a helmet under his chin. Yeah, he suffered with having to be a lead blocker for a change. But I wrote on my NFL UK column this week, I'm starting to worry about Peyton because I think he still drops it in there right on the money sometimes with the accuracy. But what if he has to drive a 20-yard in route in the wind in Foxborough in the AFC Championship game against Darrelle Revis? I don't know if that's there in his game anymore. I mean, do you feel like we're coming to the end, or is that sacrilege to say when it's Peyton Manning?
No, I don't think it's sacrilege to say. I think it's realistic. I mean, a guy can't play forever. Mm. He's played at such a high level for so long. Obviously, as a fan, you want him to never change. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is he has changed, and I think you make a great observation because when we watched the game, Neil, the ball never got down the middle of the field.
Yeah.
He threw the ball outside. He threw the ball on time. He's never had a particularly tight spiral.
No.
By his own admission. You know, somebody made a comment once about he threw some ducks, and he goes, yeah, I throw a lot of ducks, and they're called touchdowns. And that's true. But what I wanted to see him do in the game, I didn't see. Because, again, I've heard all the speculation, too. And I can see why people are starting to speculate that the best of is behind him. Mm. Because that 18-yard in cut, that one where you have to get on your front foot and really zip it.
Yep.
I didn't see that out of him. Now, he's got enough weapons, and they're good enough structurally offensively to continue to dink and dunk and nibble away.
Yeah.
But if you get behind and you... and the running game's no longer an option. Now that's when I worry about him.
I guess we'll see it depends how the season ends, but there's going to be genuine speculation about whether he comes back in 2015. The competitor probably wants to, but
he couldn't give Brock Osweiler 3 snaps.
So he's coming back, right?
Until they tell him he's got to stay away, I think he's coming back because I thought it was great camera work. Our guys caught Osweiler.
Yeah.
His reaction after he starts to put his helmet out to go out and
be
the quarterback the second half, and Peyton runs out and says, hey, go sit back down there, young fella.
But Brock Osweiler had the sense to just laugh about it and sit back down. He didn't make a big deal of it because Peyton Manning, right?
That's big brother right there. So, you know what? But that was really a poignant moment. Here's the reality. Peyton Manning, as we said, has been a great quarterback for a lot of years in this league. His skills are now starting to diminish. Mm. And this is why there was such a sense of urgency among the Denver brass last year and John Fox and John Elway and everybody that makes decisions in that organization to go out and get Emmanuel Sanders and replace Eric Decker with Emmanuel Sanders, a guy who can make more plays. I'm not saying Decker's a poor receiver because he's a great receiver, but Emmanuel can catch like Decker but can make plays for him. And now go out and get DeMarcus Ware and get the corners that they've gotten. And Aqib Talib comes in and changes the entire dynamic of that secondary. The Broncos know they have a very small window to win a Super Bowl. And it may be this year, and that's it.
And Peyton might have to accept that, and if he needs reminding of this, he goes upstairs and talks to his boss. He talks to John Elway and might have to accept that he is not going to be the entire reason they win or lose games, Lean on C.J. Anderson the way that Elway lent on Terrell Davis. Lean on that defense that you've spent money on in the offseason. Get the ball quickly into the hands of your playmakers and let them do it. So it has been done before with veteran quarterbacks at the end of their career, winning with them not being the man, so to speak?
Well, I think that, you know, you look at him and you say, he's accepted that role. There's no body language issues.
No.
There's no verbal, you know, I want to throw that. And he's a pro's pro. Mm. He wants to hoist that championship one more time. The other thing that nobody really is talking about, and you look at the Spanish, I'm going to call it the Spanish right side, Vasquez and Ramirez, those two offensive linemen on the right side of that offensive line are giving them a real good side to run the football against, because a lot of what they did running the ball was at those two big guys over there. And again, that solidified the offensive line play and given C.J. Anderson a chance to be as good a back as he is.
One other thing I wanted to talk about, Jeff, this week, and this is a sweeping question if ever there was one, but I wanted to ask you, we're going to see a lot of speculation about coaching now, about is Joe Philbin done in Miami? Is Jim Harbaugh done in Oakland? And some of the stuff on Philbin is that was a very good coordinator, but is not necessarily a leader of men. Those are the accusations that's been thrown at him. Harbaugh is, well, he wins, but he rubs people the wrong way. So here's my sweeping question, and you can do your best with it. What makes a good NFL head coach?
You know, no, you know what? This is a really good question. And I'm going to take you back to 1987. I'm in Philadelphia, and I have an opportunity to sit with Coach Vermeil and spend an all afternoon with him and asking him a lot of questions about football. Now, this is a Hall of Fame guy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions I remember asking him was, Coach, what is the responsibility of the head coach? What's the role of the head coach? And I was really surprised with his answer at the time because I really didn't understand. You know, I was too young to really know what was going on. He said, Jeff, the role of the head coach is to present a football team on the practice field that is ready to be coached.
Yep.
And I thought about, what the heck is he talking about? And the reality of it is, he's so exactly right. You have to create an environment in the building, a culture in the team, that players, when they come to work, they go to work.
Mm.
And they're anxious to be coached because they know that their coaches are going to work to make them better. Players will accept, even today's athlete will accept hard coaching. They'll accept, you know, work. They'll accept all those things as long as they understand that it's given them a chance to succeed. And for the young ones, that means getting another paycheck. For the veterans, it means a shot at going to the playoffs,
right,
and get to a bowl game.
Let's look back quickly at week 15 then, Jeff. Got to talk about Johnny Manziel a little bit.
No question.
Terrible start. I mean, it wasn't all him, but it was a lot of him. He went 10 of 18, 80 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. The obvious question now is going to come up, was Mike Pettine rushing somebody in there who wasn't ready?
You know, I saw Eric Davis made a really...
He did. That's why I'm asking that, because I saw that.
Interesting comment about this was maybe the worst coaching decision in, you know, I don't know, history.
Pretty tough.
I'm like, come on, man.
Hoyer gave him not a lot of choice. Really.
No, I mean, you got to find out if the kid can play.
Yeah.
Right? You're out of the playoffs. You got to find out if the kid can play. He's a first-round draft choice. You've got to put him out. He's not going to get better, you know, not taking reps. So I think it was the choice that Mike had to make. He's looking for a spark for his football team, number one. Number two, he's got a first-round draft choice that they're paying a lot of money to. You got to find out whether this kid can play. Now, what I would caution everybody from doing, and I would have said the same thing if he'd thrown for three touchdowns and 300 yards,
yep,
don't put too much stock in one.
No, let's get
game.
A body of work.
Let's get a substantial body of work, right? Now, the reality of the game today, and this could be Geno Smith, it could be Johnny Manziel, it could be Brandon Whedon, it could be all of these quarterbacks that have come into the game in the last couple of years that start, you know, don't start their career off right, the tendency is to just, you know, bail on them because that's the nature of the business these days. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be a guy like Johnny Manziel could learn, Then when he was completely ready, they, or as close to ready as you can ever be until you actually go do it, then they would ease him into the, you know, fire. But the reality of it is those days are gone now.
It's going to be different for Johnny, and he's going to have to learn the hard way. He said that there was no excuse for the throw where he was off balance and he tried to throw it into the end zone, and Pac-Man Jones comes up with a relatively simple interception. That's the kind of play when I was looking at his film around the draft last year, where he did that. He improvised, it was off the back foot, and he threw it up, and it was Mike Evans, 6'5", against gentlemen who are no longer playing football, because Mike Evans has moved on to the NFL and they didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different deal when you're in the NFL.
It's a completely different deal, Neil. And one of the concerns about Johnny when he was coming out was what we call his throwing platform.
Mm.
How he had his feet when he threw the football. Because he's got enough arm. He doesn't have a great arm, but he's got enough arm. The challenge is, for guys that, and this is the double-edged sword of having incredible athletic ability. You can get away with things at that level fundamentally because you're just that much better than everybody. Then when you come to this level, the National Football League, the ultimate level, the highest level, well, those guys that you were beating at A&M, they're listening to this podcast.
Right.
They're not playing corner in the NFL. Yeah. So now you're trying to make those same throws, and those balls are getting picked. That's why you have to play the kid, because he has to learn. Because he's not going to learn on the practice field.
You can't simulate it,
particularly the way practices are now in the National Football League. I think what happened to the kid could potentially be the best thing that ever happened to the kid. And the first positive step I saw out of that was that he didn't make excuses.
He owned it.
He owned it.
It was on me.
He said, it's on me, and I'm not using the rookie. I'm a rookie, excuse. Good for you, Johnny. Now, the other thing that was alarming to me when I heard, the commentator at the game that we actually got the feed from say that Manziel openly admitted that his work ethic has not been there yet, but now that he's a starter, he's working hard.
Only now you're a starter, right?
Yeah. Well, you got it backwards, my man. It's supposed to be the other way, right?
Yeah.
And hopefully he can learn that. But again, this is what's the hardest thing to evaluate when you're evaluating talent, is if it's not there by the time you get to the National Football League, typically it doesn't get better once you get to the National Football League. Now, some guys will improve because everybody around them is, more conscious of their work habits and all those other things. But you want that guy like your guy, Andrew Luck, who comes in with an incredible, insatiable desire to get better and to do things the right way. Johnny's going to have to learn that.
Browns are going to have to deal with as well, I think, defenses wanting to stick it to him, rightly or wrongly. I mean, how many times did we see the Bengals players flashing the money sign? We spoke about this months ago, Jeff, before he even stepped on a training camp field. The kid has put himself out there, has this persona and this image, whether it's all him or not, it's there. He comes across a certain way, and as if it's not hard enough being a rookie quarterback in the NFL, you're facing teams that are going to be just that little bit fired up to try and make you look stupid.
No question. And, you got to wonder, who are the people that are advising the kid?
Mm.
I mean, whether it's his mother and father who should have, if they had the influence on the guy, say, hey, come on now, there's a time for all that, right? And then, you've got LeBron James saying that you're ready to play. LeBron James never coached a down in his life. And now you're telling me he's ready. He's telling you ready to play. Well, how do you think all those guys on the Cincinnati Bengals and every other defensive player around the National Football League, maybe even players on offense around the National Football League, hey, whoa, wait a second, son. You haven't completed a pass yet.
Yeah.
You haven't thrown a touchdown pass yet. And you're out there talking all this.
Well, veterans do like rookie. I mean, Jared Allen went back. I've mentioned this a few times, but Jared Allen, I asked him, what's the advice you give rookies? He's like, let your play talk. Until your play talks, I don't want to hear you. And that's across the league, isn't it, Jeff? And that's not bullying or hazing. No, that's just the way it is. You earn your stripes on the field.
What did Tom Brady just say this weekend? I heard him.
Actions speak louder than words.
Better done than better said.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so again, this is a performance-based industry, right? Let me say that one more time. Performance-based industry. Not what you did at Texas A&M or wherever you went to high school. You can stop referring to high school in Texas A&M because that's in the past. You don't play there anymore. You play in the National Football League where the greatest of the great play. And until you've done something, you better be humble and you better understand that you earn everything in the National Football League. Nothing's given to you.
Certainly nothing given to quarterbacks who face the Buffalo Bills. What about that performance? 21-13 win. Buffalo beat Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers came in as the highest rated quarterback in the NFL, the highest rated quarterback in NFL history. He posts a rating of 34.3, Jeff, the lowest in his career.
Well, I think what's interesting is to take out of that game was the reaction of the Bills defense. They said, hey, we fully anticipated we were going to shut down Manning and we were going to shut down Aaron Rodgers. Mm. We fully anticipated it. Now, Jim Schwartz has taken a real good defense, which Mike Pettine left him, and maybe improved on it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because their pass defense is outstanding. And they're, you know, Stephon Gilmore is not a name that's going to come up when you start talking about the top corners in the National Football League. But Kari Rambo gets two interceptions. He'd been cut, I think, twice.
Cut by Washington earlier this season. And they had a terrible second.
It's not like he's doing it with consensus, you know, Pro Bowlers back there. They have an outstanding defensive line. Mario Williams, when he plays, when he wants to play, is as good a pass rusher as in the National Football League. Jerry Hughes on the other side, outstanding pass rusher. Mm. Donovan Darius inside, first round draft choice, rock inside. Wood, great player. So it's not like they don't have players, but this defense is playing as a defense beyond its sum is better than its parts.
It is Jim Schwartz does bring a bit of attitude, doesn't he? I mean, that's one of the things that he kind of does bring, whether it rubbed people the wrong way again as a head coach. He did bring that.
That's been his history. Yeah. You go all the way back to when he was a young coordinator in Tennessee, and, you know, he gets those guys to get up the field and get after the passer. They do that extremely well. I'm really happy for Doug Marrone from
NFL Europe.
Absolutely.
Hey, love it.
And soon to be back here in London next year.
Yes, can't wait for that.
You know, I'm really happy for Doug because I listen to talk radio in Buffalo all year long.
Yeah.
We're so close. We're 45 minutes away from Buffalo. And you talk about fans that believe that the sky is falling at every turn. It is unbelievable. They just almost will themselves into bad performances and bad things happening. So I'm glad to see a few good things happening for the Buffalo Bills. I know it makes the fans probably nervous because they can't.
Yeah,
it'll never land. I swear to God, it's like Eeyore in
the Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh, the cartoon. Eeyore, it'll never work.
Detroit. I'm going to stick with Green Bay losing in the NFC North. Detroit get a big win. They had to do it the hard way. And two things stood out for me in this win, Jeff, which is kind of worth talking about. They did it with defense again. I mean, we're about to go into week 16. So this is a season-long defensive effort from the Lions. It's not a 3 or 4-game fluke. It's been there all season. The only other thing I would add on this is good signing of Matt Prater. At midseason, they were hurting with their kicker. You know, they were on their third kicker, and they'd not been able to kick field goals. And Prater got the 3 field goals that ended that game, really, to get the Lions, you know, an important win. So they, you know, it's not pretty, but then, boy, there's a lot of teams around the NFL that it's not pretty right now. You just get the win, right?
Well, yeah, you know, you talk about the importance of a field goal kicker. They look at 2 games. You look at the game you speak about with the Lions and their opportunity to beat Minnesota. And then you look at the Cardinals, and they win without a touchdown because their rookie kicker kicks 4 field goals. So that will always be important in the National Football League. And we talked about the red zone and how important all that is. When you look at the Lions, I'm watching this game and I'm thinking to myself, the Lions now have a chance. Green Bay has gifted them a chance to win the division.
Yeah.
And they're struggling down the end. But all things, you know, again, there's two sides to every story. I think, personally, what Zimmer is doing in Minnesota is all positive. You see that team competing hard.
Yep.
They got a rookie quarterback who made some bad mistakes that hurt them. But you know what? He gets a field goal blocked. He's keeping his football team in football games. And that's a divisional game on the road against a team that has a chance to go into first place in the division. I was really impressed with how hard the Vikings played.
Dallas got a big win. The Jags gave up 8 sacks against Baltimore. I told you in preseason that I was worried about their offensive line when I saw them in training camp. Anything else catch your eye in Week 15, Jeff, before
well,
we move on?
if you're a Jets fan, right, you're thinking
that
you're in the Marcus Mariota sweepstakes. And
they went to number 6.
and now they dropped to number 6. But you know what? I understand. Because Rex is fighting his butt off to just win a game. And,
yep.
You know, is it going to be enough to save his job? I don't know. You know, because I'm not making those decisions. But I know this as a competitor. That head coach and 53 of those guys standing on the sidelines, they weren't thinking about who getting a first-round draft choice. They were thinking about getting one
Rex
more win.
Rex said that, didn't he? He said afterwards, he said, I couldn't give a damn.
Yeah.
He said, I want to win.
Yeah,
what would you want your head coach to
absolutely
say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then the Titans on that final play, when they're throwing the ball around there, I was like, oh, my God.
They almost got it, didn't they? I mean, that was incredible. Why Delanie Walker thinks he can lower the shoulder and step out of bounds at the end of that play, I don't know. It really was, you know, he didn't quite think that one through. But it wasn't a classic weekend of NFL action, but I think we saw again, I don't know, just this, the playoff picture is so crowded that we're seeing that it's going to go right down to the wire. And I just think in the NFC, one slip up, this is how tight it is now, one slip up could potentially make a difference between you going to the Super Bowl or not. Look at Green Bay.
Well, so that's exactly
Green Bay may now have to go to Seattle for the championship
game. Exactly. You had a chance to go into Buffalo and take one step, get one step closer to home field advantage through the playoffs. Playing in Lambeau in January is a huge difference as opposed to maybe going to Seattle and playing in front of the 12s. Well, imagine the feeling not only in Detroit, because now the Lions have a chance to win the division, but also the feeling in Seattle and some of these other places where, hey, you know, we close this thing out right. We may host the championship game.
Yeah, there's quite a few teams still alive to host that championship game in the NFC. Let's move on and make our picks, and then we'll get to some questions in the mailbag. As I mentioned at the start, it is a busy week on Sky Sports this week. We've got Tennessee and Jacksonville on Thursday night. Then we've got an early Christmas present for you, a doubleheader on Saturday, December the 20th, Sky Sports 4 from 9:30 p.m. We've got Philadelphia and Washington, then San Diego and San Francisco. Then it's normal service resumed 5:30 p.m. on Sunday with Kansas City and Pittsburgh and Indianapolis and Dallas. So let's start with our picks then, Jeff. On Thursday night, this... what a game. What a game. Oh. Tennessee... I shouldn't say that because I do think there's a lot to be positive about with Jacksonville, but I'm just so worried about their offensive line. But I'm going to pick Jacksonville to get win number 3 this week. I think they can take Tennessee at home, but who do you see winning this one?
You know what? I hear exactly what you're saying, because Gus Bradley's got to feel a little bit like the kid that stuck his finger in the dike, right? And then there's another hole, and then there's another. I mean, he gets a punt blocked, but then comes back and has, you know, runs a fake punt. I mean, he's doing everything he can do to try and get this team over the hump.
Yep.
The reality
onside
of it
kick call
yeah,
as
I
well.
Mean, they're a great execution of an onside kick by Scobie, and they're so close, but they just can't seem to get over the hump. And the reality for that is it has nothing to do with Gus Bradley. It has everything to do with they're not good enough, frankly, yet.
Yeah.
Tennessee's a little bit the same animal, you know.
It's going to be Charlie Whitehurst this week. Jake Locker's done for the year.
Well, you know what? I said it on the broadcast. If you know, they ought to put the quarterbacks in Tennessee on the endangered species list, because those guys are dropping like flies. I'm going to take Jacksonville in this one.
All right, we're both going Jacksonville. So move on to Saturday night then, and we've got two teams who are clinging to their playoff lives in San Diego and Philadelphia, going up against teams led by quarterbacks who still have a little bit to prove. So San Diego at San Francisco. Colin Kaepernick struggles or not, I still think there's some backbone to this 49ers team. I think there's some steel to them. So I'm going to go San Francisco to win at home.
Can you tell me if they've got any running backs left up there?
They don't. Was it Smith? Was it Alphonso Smith? I think they were down to. So I think you might, maybe old Victor can get old Victor out. Victor Muhammad from the British leagues. I mean, I don't know if they're going to have anyone else fit again. I know, Frank Gore's got the concussion, hasn't he?
Yeah, I tell you what, this is a big, 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 big game.
San Diego need it more. I guess that might make a difference.
And
I don't know.
San Francisco's at home. Mm. They haven't played well in a couple weeks. They got a really listless offense right now. And with no, if they don't have a running back for a running game, they're really going to struggle because Kaepernick's just not throwing it very well right now. So I'm going to take San Diego to win on the road.
All right, so you're going to San Diego. Then we've got, that's going to be the later of the two games on Saturday night, Sunday morning. Philadelphia at Washington, Mark Sanchez gets another shot, as we said.
Well, I just, you know, after watching Odell Beckham shred that Redskins secondary, I mean, he's catching a couple of those touchdown passes he caught. There wasn't anybody within 10 yards of him. So I don't think Sanchez is a great thrower, but I think that Washington defense is going to struggle, and I'll take Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm going Philadelphia as well. Memories of what Andrew Luck and the Colts did to him a few weeks back absolutely ripped that secondary apart. Let's move on to Sunday's games then. Cleveland at Carolina.
Big game for Carolina.
Yeah.
Huge game for Carolina because they have to win to have any chance. I spoke to my Carolina Panther insider this morning, my son Keiko, and he said, take Carolina. So I'm taking Carolina.
All right. Well, he's arriving soon, so I don't want to upset him straight away. So I'm saying Carolina as well in that one. I just think, again, there's going to be sort of ups and downs with Johnny Manziel. Season's done in terms of the playoffs for the Browns now. Carolina have, you know, plenty to play for, as do the Detroit Lions, and the Chicago Bears don't. This is Detroit at Chicago.
Boy, I tell you what, I think what I saw last night on the television screen from Chicago, 10,000 empty seats in Soldier Field, speaks an awful lot about where that team is right now.
Yeah.
And the Lions need this win. The Bears defense has never gotten any better. I'm just going to take Detroit.
Yeah, I'm going to go Detroit as well. I think they heap more misery on Jay Cutler. Baltimore at Houston. So Houston now are going to be down to, they've already lost Ryan Mallett. They lost Ryan Fitzpatrick to a broken leg. So they're down to Case Keenum, who got a couple of starts last year. So I'm thinking that Baltimore keep it rolling here.
Yeah, I think this is Baltimore's game to win. And a lot of big ups, in my opinion, to the Houston defense. I watched J.J. Watt again. If he doesn't win the National Football League's Most Valuable Player Award, I think it's a sham.
Yeah, hopefully he gets a shot after Aaron Rodgers had one down game there in Buffalo. Let's move on to Minnesota at Miami. This is a tough one to call because, you know, a couple of weeks ago you just said, well, Miami are the better team from top to bottom. They've got the better roster. But, you know, Mike Zimmer does have Minnesota playing hard, and Miami, I don't get the sense that they've mailed it in, but they must be deflated by the fact that the playoff opportunity has now gone. So where do you see this one?
Well, where's the game being played?
It's in Miami.
All right, so it's in Miami. If it was the other way around and the Dolphins were going to have to go outside in December in Minnesota, I would give it to Minnesota all the way. The Dolphins are a better football team.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, I know the injuries have caught up with them a little bit, but I'm going to take Miami.
Miami have got to learn to finish, Jeff. Maybe this is where their next step is because they had almost double the offensive yardage of the Patriots in the first half. Yeah, they had the blocked field goal. They had another drop in the end zone that resulted in a field goal. And they've had close games. They didn't finish against Green Bay. They've done it with several teams this year. It's getting over the hump for that team.
Yeah, and again, it's like you say, they got to finalize, you know, field goal protection. They got to finalize catching the ball. They got to finalize winning football games. And, you know, that's the missing ingredient right now with the Dolphins because they're a good enough football team to be in the playoffs, I think.
All right, both going Miami in that one. Atlanta at New Orleans, it's always high scoring. Atlanta won the first of these meetings in week one. Obviously, that was in Atlanta. I think it might be different in New Orleans, so I'm going to say the Saints, but it's hard to have faith in either of these
teams. You know what?
Teams.
You would, in the old date.
Oh, yeah, that was a shoo-in. They've lost four in a row at home.
Absolutely. They can't win at home right now.
No.
And
then we're getting those brown paper bags out like the good old days.
Atlanta is a scary team, in my opinion, for New Orleans because they can throw the football. And, again, if their receivers are healthy, I haven't seen an injury report.
Yeah, see if Julio Jones is back.
If Julio Jones is back, I'm going to take Atlanta. So this is hard for me to do because I have so many friends in New Orleans, but I'm going to take Atlanta to go in there and make it tough on New Orleans.
Rob Ryan's too busy to listen to this podcast.
Me too.
New England at the New York Jets. We can move on this one relatively quickly. I think New England consistently good again, year on year on year. Six straight AFC titles now.
Yeah, and it's sad because it's just not enough in the back end for the Jets to challenge in this one. And Rex will have a great defensive game plan against him. He always does against Brady and New England, but he just doesn't have any players.
All right, both go New England. First game on Sunday then is a good one. Kansas City at Pittsburgh. Simple equation for the Pittsburgh Steelers now. Defend your home for the next 2 weeks and you win the division. They've got themselves into that position. They play Kansas City this week. They host Cincinnati in week 17. I think where you can attack Pittsburgh is you can throw on them with those corners. They do still give up some big plays, but Kansas City, as we've seen, don't have huge amounts of weaponry at wide receiver, so I'm going to go Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that LeBeau will stack the box against the Kansas City running game, and if you take Charles out of the game, and you look at the two touchdown passes that Alex Smith threw last week, one's to a back down the seam. He beat a linebacker in man coverage for about 70 yards. And the other one's Travis Kelce, a tight end lined up as a wide receiver, catching a slant ball. Their wide receivers are non-existent, so they play into Pittsburgh's strength. And, again, I think Pittsburgh, I look for Le'Veon Bell to have a better day running the football than he had last week.
Yep. Pittsburgh for you then?
Yep.
All right, both going Pittsburgh in that game. Green Bay at Tampa Bay. Is this a get-healthy game?
Well, I think it's a get back to doing what we do game. And, poor Lovey, it seems like it goes from bad to worse for him because he's got to go, deal with Aaron Rodgers, who I'm sure this week will be on fire. And, you look at that and they did some things that were so uncharacteristic of the Packers. Missing wide open receivers.
Jordy Nelson, that drop
would certainly have been a huge play and a momentum changer in the game. Bulaga isn't going to play, it looks like, with that head injury. So, I don't think that's going to be enough to get Tampa over the hump. So I'm going to take Green Bay.
All right, both going Green Bay in that one. The New York Giants at the St. Louis Rams.
Give me the Rams. I don't think the Giants are that good on defense. I watched the one red zone play where RG3 threw the touchdown pass to the back. They didn't even cover the back out of the backfield. I have no idea what they were doing communication wise. And I think that while St. Louis isn't a great team offensively, I think they're not good enough to score some points. And however they do it, special teams But I think they're good enough to score 17 points. If they score 17 points, they can beat the Giants.
I'm just a typical media guy who only watches the quarterback and the receiver, so I'm going Giants. It's all about Odell Beckham. I don't watch things like the line play and coverages, Jeff.
He is fun to watch, man. I'll tell you that right now. But, Tavon Austin, can he return a punt? Can he do some things? That's where I think they might have a chance, and I just don't think the Giants are very good on defense.
All right, so I'm going Giants, and you're going Rams in that game. Good game we've got then for our second game, Indianapolis at Dallas. And, I guess DeMarco Murray is going to be a factor in this because some teams have been able to get physical with the Colts and run on that defense. I know that the Patriots did it a few weeks back. Andrew Luck can get his points against this Dallas defense. It's a tough one to call.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this. Whether if Murray doesn't play, if Indianapolis doesn't just very early on really start to blitz Romo a lot and try and knock him down. They're not going to rush four and have success against that offensive line. So if Murray plays, I'm going to take the Cowboys. Let me go out on a limb, and I'm going to take the Cowboys.
All right. I'm thinking about I'm trying to think, and I haven't got all the scenarios in front of me, whether how significantly the Colts can change their playoff seeding as well, which could be a factor, because they've won the division, they're in. And at this time of year, you know, needing it can be as big a factor as well. And Dallas have no room for error, so
well,
I'm going to
say for whatever
Dallas
it's worth, you know, I heard Pagano say that he was not going to rest players at all down the stretch, and he was going to, you know, put the pedal to the metal and, you know, try and score as many as he can.
Oh, you changed my mind then, Jeff. I've just written down Dallas, but I'm going to go Indianapolis. I can't go against my boy. I can't go against my man. Andrew Luck and the Colts get that win. Buffalo, Oakland, I think that Derek Carr has shown some improvement. They took a step back again last week. This has got to be Buffalo, even though it's going out west.
Well, Derek got hit a bunch last week and got sacked four times, and he hasn't seen – I mean, this is a really good bunch coming after him this week, so I'm going to give Buffalo – this is a big win for, you know, again – for Coach Marone, I think it's a huge step for the organization, Buffalo. And it's give them nine, right? This will be their ninth win.
Let's have a look.
They've got eight.
Yeah, be their ninth.
And this will be the first time in recent memory that the Bills will finish above 500. And that's a huge, huge thing for that organization.
Let's move on to the Sunday night game, Seattle at Arizona. Now we're going to see. Seattle won the first meeting, but Arizona got eight sacks.
Hey, I'm just saying, even if you got to take a nap on Sunday afternoon after the Sunday roast, take a nap because this one's going to be worth watching if you like hitting. Now, if you don't like hitting, then go to sleep. But this is going to be a hitting festival from the very start, from the first kickoff. It is going to be physical. Two teams that play great defense and love to play defense. And two offenses that just do enough to get by. I'm going to take Seattle because of the fact that, you know, again, the Cardinals have been through just so decimated, particularly at the quarterback position. But that magic man out there.
You wouldn't surprise you, would it?
That magic man, Bruce Arians, behind those, you know, behind those glasses, he's got a little something about him. He's doing some wizardry out there in the desert.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Seattle as well, just because I think both defenses will show up and do their part, and there'll be a lot of sacks and a lot of hitting. But you can just see, if you're going to ask one quarterback to make something happen, it's going to be Russell Wilson, not Ryan Lindley. So I'm going to go.
Who?
Exactly. I can barely even say it, let alone talk about him. Monday night game then to finish us off in week 16, Denver at Cincinnati.
Oh, wow. Now, you know, this is...
See, when it's the tough ones, you notice I let you go first.
Yeah, I've noticed that. But you know what? I'm going to take Cincinnati.
All right.
Right? And Denver's defense is better than they've been. And I'm still not sold on Andy Dalton. But it's going to be cold in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati's defense played well last week. If Patrick Newman comes back, that gives you know, people don't realize about Cincinnati's defense. They have five former first round draft choices in that secondary. Mm. So that I think is a good thing for them. And I'm going to take Cincinnati.
It's a national TV game, which means Andy Dalton will need a new pair of trousers by the end of it. So I'm going. So I'm going Denver.
And why is that, Neil?
Because he just doesn't like that big stage. So I'm going Denver. Let's go into the mailbag before I get into trouble. Let's get a couple of these done quickly. Where's the first one? Oh, this was a good one. So BKKNFL says, what can Texans fans expect from Jadeveon Clowney following his knee injury in operation? How long will his recovery be, and will he be the same player? So he's had the microfracture surgery. Gosta Cherilis, who's the offensive lineman for the Indianapolis Colts, underwent the same surgery. And he said this week, I'm an offensive lineman. It's a different ball game for me. And then he actually said, Clowney's screwed because of the explosiveness. I mean, this is a serious operation. John Sullivan telling me they kind of break all little holes in your kneecap.
What they do, and they create little fissures in the bone to encourage new cartilage to be laid down.
Right.
Now, we just had a linebacker go through this ourselves in Hamilton, and he's going to take next. He played about six or eight games, but he's going to take next year off because he feels like it takes a second year for this thing to heal.
Yeah,
this is a scary, scary proposition for the Houston Texans because Clowney obviously was drafted the first player in the draft. That's a huge investment in a guy, but he did show some flashes of being the guy that everybody saw in those workouts. Mm. Now, how much is this going to set him back? Here's, the issue that I always go back to. If you aren't a worker, if you aren't a weight room guy, which he's not, mm-hmm. if you're not a guy that's going to bust his hump to be better, which that's not his reputation, and now you've got a setback like this that's going to require a tremendous amount of rehab. Mm. That's not a good combination, no. right, for the future. And so if I'm the Texans, I've got some concerns here.
A question from Armchair Quarterback, which I wanted to bring up for a couple of reasons. He says, is Jay Cutler done in Chicago? I bet Bruce Arians can't wait to get him in the desert and make him a star. And I thought about this for two reasons, because I wanted to talk to you about Arians did tidy up the game of Carson Palmer quite a bit before Palmer got injured. There were interceptions in his game that got tidied up. But I think it's worth pointing out to Armchair Quarterback that the movement of franchise quarterbacks from team to team is extremely limited in the NFL. Whether it's good speculation or a good fit doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Well, typically, here's what, if you got a team that's underperforming, mm. you're going to look at three positions more than any other. Number one's the quarterback, number two's the head coach, and number three's the GM. Well, when your quarterback has just signed to be the highest paid player in the National Football League, if you cut him, you now have a ton of dead money against your cap for the next while. Mm. You can get rid of the head coach because he's probably making $3 million a year for a three-year contract. All right? So he's already through 2 years of it, so you'd pay him $3 million and you'd be done with him. Or you can fire the GM and the head coach, and you'd still make out better financially than firing the quarterback. That's why it's so hard to get rid of quarterbacks who are making franchise money. I think the reality of it in Chicago is there's got to be changes made. And Mark Trestman was brought there because he's a quarterback whisperer. I mean, mm-hmm. he's done a great job with quarterbacks wherever he's been. You know, you talk to guys that have coached him, you know, Steve Young being one. They talk about what a phenomenal job he does with quarterbacks, you know. So is that the problem, or is it the quarterback who's throwing the interceptions the problem? I don't know for certain because I don't sit in their meetings, but I do know this. I know Mark's reputation has always been as being a great coach of quarterbacks. You know, when he was in Oakland, you know, he took a guy that was just another guy to the Super Bowl and led the league in passing and all of those things. And you talk to him, and any the only guy he credits with his greatness is Trestman. So somebody's going in Chicago, but I'm afraid it's going to be either Phil Emery, Mark Trestman, or both, and then Cutler will be there.
All right, you've answered another question we had there, Jeff. That's good stuff on the Bears from John Gemmel, who was asking why they were struggling and would there be changes made. This question's a good one. You can maybe throw some light on this. Ben Braddock says, Jeff, are there any standout players in the CFL that we could be looking at to head to the NFL in 2015? I mean, we've seen this happen in the past over the years. I mean, who... people can make the jump?
Yeah, there's guys every year that make the jump. Last year, a kid named Marcus Ball, who's now playing safety at New Orleans,
yep.
was in Toronto. And Dontrell Inman, who's a receiver that's in San Diego, was in Toronto last year. Every year, there are guys. You know, it's an opportunity for guys to play. More guys can play in the National Football League mm-hmm. than ever make the National Football League. So the only alternative league right now at a high level is the Canadian Football League. And so guys come up there for that express purpose to go and play. We get them back from them. Justin yeah. Hickman, who came in to us from Indianapolis, came back. Brandon Banks, our tremendous punt returner, is maybe go back.
Could he go back, do you think?
He could go back to the NFL, I think. The only thing with him is, you know, he can't spend time on practice roster because he was a three-year NFL veteran.
Right.
So, again, that's a question with Brandon. But Brandon certainly can play in the National Football League. Shoots, he did it.
Yeah.
We've got a kid named Delvin Bro, who is a corner from LSU that I think is, I know he's had six or seven NFL workouts. He's a free agent right now. So there will be guys from our league that will be down there playing on Sundays next year. And there'll be guys that are playing on Sunday this year that will come back to us. And, you know, Brian Hall, who's our starting nose tackle, has a Super Bowl ring from the Ravens. So, you know, it works both ways.
Let's have one more question, and then we'll finish up this week on Inside the Huddle. Tom Marshall says, he's getting a tiny bit ahead of himself already. Jim Harbaugh's already left the 49ers. With this question, I mean, Tom, to be fair, we all feel that that's going to be the case. So Tom asks, would Atlanta be a good spot for Jim Harbaugh? There's lots to do, but they do have a franchise quarterback in Matt Ryan. I think this is a really good observation from Tom, because when you look at what Arthur Blank wanted in Atlanta this year, he wanted to get tougher. And I don't think it's really happened. You know, they still are an offense-driven team that scores points, but they don't have a backbone. And I think that's the one thing that Jim Harbaugh's teams have. They have a steel about them, a grit about them.
Every team he's ever coached has been that way. All the way from, you know, Stanford was had a reputation of being soft and non-competitive and all that. He went in there and changed that in 1 year. Now, he did the same thing in San Francisco. San Francisco was soft and non-competitive. Mm. And then he went in there and changed that. So I think the thing you got to look at here, is, and this is really interesting with Harbaugh, they're going to trade him, it's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting part about that is, and Bill Polian said they could trade him anywhere. He had no say in the matter. Mm. Well, that's not true. He does have say in the matter.
Right.
So it's got to be a place
he wants
to go. So you couldn't trade him to Jacksonville or Tampa Bay, you know, they're just pulling names, if he didn't feel like that was where he wanted to go. So one of the things I'm sure he's going to want wherever he goes is control over personnel and a quarterback.
That's interesting, because he wouldn't have control over personnel in Atlanta as it stands right now, because Thomas Dimitroff is a sort of pretty respected young general manager.
Highly respected young general manager.
So that would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how that plays out. Where he, you know, that's why there's so much speculation out there about Oakland. He wouldn't have to move. He lives in the Bay Area. He's got kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's an organization that would be willing to give him that kind of control,
I think
it would be the Raiders.
I think the same with Miami would be the same. You know, they've just hired a new general manager last year from Tampa and Dennis Hickey, but I think they took a real swing at Harbaugh the first time around and he went to San Francisco. I think they would cede that control to him as well, because I think they would like that kind of coach. They went after Jeff Fisher and didn't get him as well. So.
Well, that'd be interesting, you know, and that's you're talking about a whole nother lifestyle change now when you go all the way to Florida from once you've been a California guy since his days playing with the Chargers. Was the head coach at the University of San Diego, then moved up the coast to be the head coach at Stanford, then moved 15 miles away to Santa Clara to be the head coach of the 49ers. So his family has really only known living in California. So that would be a huge family decision.
All right, we'll stop it there, Jeff, because I'm not saying I'm out of shape, but I've just got cramp while doing this podcast. Is that bad? That's bad, isn't it?
That's bad, isn't it?
So I think we better stop it right there, because I'm struggling. Ouch. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. And Jeff, we'll see all these good people in the studio on Saturday and Sunday this week.
Absolutely. Can't wait to show the best of the NFL to our fans again this week.
All right. So that's been Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds. We will speak to you all next week. Until then, it's bye for now. Bye-bye.